2 years, from 1975 to 1977.
How old were you then?
How old was I? I was about 10 when we were in Thailand. Yep.
You were 10 when you actually left Laos?
No, 9 actually left Laos. Right.
Okay.
I'm not young anymore. I'm 45.
You're young. You're very young.
No, but a lot of people think that I'm younger, but I'm not. So, but anyway, so we lived in a refugee camp for 2 years, and after that, we moved to France. We went to France. We went to France. I lived in France from January 1977 through July 1979. Yes, I always call that. Then I live in Michigan ever since, like 1975 until now.
Okay. And who's in your family?
Well, if you research within the, this is off the record, but I'm just going to explain to you a little bit. If you research based on the Hmong culture, like their polygyny, so my dad was a colonel in the army, with the CIA army. Well, you can put that down too. Yeah, you can put that down too, but I'm just talking about the family structure. And we have always lived with my grandfather. My grandfather, actually my last name is Lee, but most people, like, who went to France, they took their grandfather's first name attached to their last name. That's why my last name is Lee Tong Pao. So Tong Pao is actually my grandfather's first name.
And how many children were you?
We have 5. There's 5 of us, with it just for my mom, because my mom was the first, right? But, you know, with if I would include, like, all the other siblings, we have, like, 14 of us. But we get along. But anyway, so we have always lived with my grandparents, you know, due to the close-knit family time. So my grandfather was, my grandfather decided to go to France. So we went.
You know why France?
I don't know why France, but I think it's because of his relationship, because my grandfather actually was the first mayor, Hmong mayor of Laos. So you want to put that in your, yeah. He was actually the first Hmong person that was named a mayor in Laos. In a province, I don't remember the name of the province, but I will find out and let you know.
Okay.
Because my sister, my oldest sibling, because I'm the youngest of 5, from all my oldest siblings.
You're the baby?
I'm the baby. Yeah, I'm the baby. But anyway, so I don't know why, but maybe because of the relationship with him and the French people, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe at that time, like maybe the United States, you know, stop letting people to come, and maybe the French was opening up. I don't know.
Did all the Hmong people leave Laos at that time?
No.
Which leads me to ask, how did your family?
How did my
figure out?
Okay, how did your family figure out? So we moved out of Laos is because my father was a colonel, and then if they ever get caught within the, you know, at home, then they'll be killed. So a lot of, I would say, military family, like, people have to move out of there first with planes to go to the base in Thailand. So not all the Hmong people left Laos. But the majority, I don't know exactly how many, but I don't think it is the majority. You know, at that time, I would say about like 30% have left at that time. And then later on, as the year progressed, and then people will start to be coming in. And of course, if you research it online, you will probably read a lot of history, a lot of story about how family crossed the Mekong River and died. Yeah, so. But my family was very fortunate that my family left Laos. You know,
can you tell me a little bit what it was like for you? You were
I don't remember a lot, but all we remember was just like the time to leave because the communism was coming over. And I remember that much, but you know.
You don't remember the journey.
I don't remember the journey. I don't remember a lot of things. All we have to do is just get on the plane and go to Thailand. But I don't remember how, you know, who decided what to do, but I will find more information about you, about my sibling from you.
And do you remember anything, how you felt about what was, you know, your little girl? No.
It's, you know, it's just typical. Because I think that it's because, like, you got used to it. You know, because I don't remember much, but my older sibling, they were talking about, you know, back then when we have, like, so many incidents when they have, like, fights, like, war. We have fights over and you know,
some human incidents?
Not human, but like when they have wars, yeah. Like, you know, like they attack. So some nights, like you have to go under the ground on all those tunnels.
In Laos or in Thailand?
Laos.
And you remember that or your the stories from your siblings?
Stories from my siblings, of course. But I, if you wanted to interview my sibling, I will be glad to ask them to talk
maybe
to you.
Maybe I would.
Yeah, she lives in East Kensington.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
Because they know more, and my brother-in-law can tell you more, too. Yeah.
So you were then, what, 11 when you went to France?
Went to France, yeah.
Do you know what part of France?
Limoges. It's L-I-M-O-G-E-S. I live there.
Near Paris?
It's southern of Paris. Southern of Paris. South of Paris.
Do you remember that at all?
Oh, I remember. There were some good memories there. Good to school.
Were there other Hmong people that went there?
Yes. Actually, there were other Hmong people there, like, it's because, like, it's been a lot of, like immigrants into, it's more like an apartment. And then you will go and stay in the apartment until, like, you start to find a job, like, your family find a job, and you move out on your own apartment.
And then how did they decide to come to America?
How did we decide to come to America? We decided to come over here because one of my second older sisters got married and came over here first. And my oldest brother, the only brother that I have, you know, from my mom, they both of them came to settle in Michigan.
Were their husbands Hmong people too?
Yes, my brother-in-law, yes.
Well, then, still, how did... Well, did he decide or they decide to come
to Michigan? Well, I think that when, you know, like back then, because a lot of churches, like, they are, like, sponsors. You know, like, nowadays, like, sponsor people overseas to come, and they came to Michigan, and actually they were in Frankenmuth. They settled in Frankenmuth. Yes. They settled
your family or these?
My siblings. Yeah, they were
Frankenmuth.
Frankenmuth because the church, one of the Lutheran church sponsored them. So that's why we came to Michigan, because their church sponsored them, and they settled in Michigan here first. And then my mom decided to come to America when they interviewed you to France. When you get to France, they asked you how to see how many children do you have. And then she told them the number of children she has, and she told them she had two of them in the United States. And they asked her to see if she wanted to come to the States. And she said she would like to, and then that's how we got our paper process to come to the States legally. So,
is she living here?
Well, she passed away about 20 years ago.
So you were young?
I was young. I was still in high school. But that's why we came to Michigan, to prove to family.
So it would be probably helpful for me to speak to the people. I know they're active also in Lansing, the Lutheran services.
I think so. See, I don't know.
They brought in help a lot.
Oh, they have
Catholic social services and Lutheran, I don't know what the formal name is.
Yes,
but they work with a lot of immigrants and refugees.
Yes.
So that's probably a...
Yeah, so maybe you want to interview them too. They have been involved.
So you say Frankenmuth is one place.
Frankenmuth is one place where my siblings were sponsored. But, and then I believe they were, and then I will give you my brother-in-law's brother to interview too, because he was one of the people that he sailed down in Frankfurt at that time too. My brother-in-law's brother, he's in Taoyuan. But I will give you some information so you can contact him.
Okay.
Yeah. Very nice, neat gentleman, very knowledgeable about a lot of things.
And he's in Frankenmuth now?
He's in Warren now, Australian Heights, but he was settling down in Frankenmuth with my sister and brother-in-law.
How is he related?
He's my brother-in-law's cousin. It's kind of complicated, but he's my brother-in-law's brother.
And he lives in, is that Warren?
Sterling Heights, no. Sterling Heights?
Oh, Sterling Heights.
Right.
So, I think one of the things for me to identify is, okay, we know that in Lansing there is a
right.
group of people. In Frankenmuth.
Used to.
Oh, not anymore.
Not anymore.
Do you know why then?
Well, I think due to jobs. So, like, when people get jobs and they move out, I believe. See, we used to have a large Hmong population in Saginaw, too. I grew up in Saginaw, went to high school in Saginaw, went to college in Saginaw. But after the jobs, and a lot of people move out of Saginaw, too. So right now, we don't have that many people living in Saginaw. Well, I have like 4 or 5 families only live there. Yeah, that's all.
So that's part of the history.
Right.
Saginaw was a place, Frankenmuth was a place.
Right.
What are some of the other first settlement areas that you're aware of?
If I can think of some of them, I would say like in a small city. Travel city, like they sponsor a couple family, but not anymore, so they all move out. Yeah, but they're not the first settlers. They're like coming a little bit after.
Did you say a Traverse City?
Traverse City. Is that what you're
saying? And what about now? Where are the main...
Detroit Metro.
Really?
In Detroit Metro. Detroit Metro is the largest. Although we do have a large Hmong population in Oakland County, in the Pontiac area here too. But Detroit Metro is the largest Hmong population right now.
Now, are you in touch with relatives or friends in that area?
Oh yes, I involved with the Hmong community, so I know.
You're running the Hmong,
right? I know people.
So. Tell me a little bit about this organization. I mean, that's how I found you. I Googled, and
right.
luckily you said, oh, yes, you can come. Oh, yes, I can come. I mean, I didn't know what that
was. Our organization was based in Saginaw. Yeah, we were
the organization?
Right. It used to be based in Saginaw. Like, you know, like, we started back in 1980. We were called, we switched to a few different names over the years to fit the purpose of our group. But we were based in Saginaw back in 1980. And then after 1980, and then we, I would say in the early 90s, after a lot of people move out. And of course, like, when we used to have a large Hmong population there, that we actually have an office, and we actually have a director that was servicing the Hmong population.
Like, in Saginaw.
In Saginaw. But as far as for translation and social services, hospital, but as the people like learn how the skill trades and people move out, and then we don't, you know, we didn't receive any more money from the federal government. So that's where the office was shut down in the late 80s. So that's when a lot of more people like start moving out to the area.
And where did that's when they went to Detroit?
Well, some of them, the majority went to Detroit, so a few of them went out of state for job purposes, you know, wherever the job takes them, or move out, be closer to family or relatives out of state too.
And do you have any materials that are already written about the organization? I hear public relations materials or something that explains a little bit about...
I don't know if we have them, but I have to go and dig them out because since the office was closed, we have like boxes of stuff and I have not been looking through them. So after...
This is like a treasure hunt for me.
Right. So after, like, each president, so we just move along, like, you know, the box to the next person, you know, what have I been looking at those things? No, I have not been looking at
those
things.
And you have the boxes?
I have those things with me, but I have not been looking in there yet.
Are they in your Hmong language or
in English? No, probably English, I believe. No, in Hmong too, I believe.
Are there any kinds of things that I could look at some point?
I have to go find out first. I have to go find out what kind of things I can have in there first to see, you know, if, who are you actually looking for, you know?
The history and the background.
I'm not so sure if we actually wrote some history down, but I'll find out.
Okay, I mean, not just like minutes from meetings, but if you have any kind of things that explain, you know, about people coming here, what they were doing, and
okay,
if there's anything.
I do have a few people that you can get you can get in contact with, then who are, you know, in the Richfield area too.
Where's that?
Richfield, like Vasta area.
Richfield.
Richville. Right. But and then there were people. Well, there's still some people there too. But I do have all the people that you can actually get contact with because they were settling here back in 1976, 1977 too. They were the early ones back in Richfield too.
Where's that?
Well, right now he moved.
No, I mean, where is Richfield?
Richfield? Do you know where?
Close to Detroit? Or?
No, Richfield is more like where you go towards, do you know where Vassar is? No?
I mean, I'll look at a map.
Bay City? Close to Bay City area?
Yeah.
That area? Yeah. Sangamo? It's West Sangamo. But they don't live there anymore. But they still have some people live there. But I can give you some more information. I can give you his information to you. You can contact them. He will be one of the good persons you contact with. And I believe that he's putting out some kind of historical artifacts right now in the Frankie Moose Museum. I believe.
Really?
But I believe. I cannot.
That would be a good contact for them.
And if you want to know more about the war in West Central Michigan, you'd be a good person to contact with him because he knows a lot of things. And this, his name is Chu.
C-R.
Are you? Nothing is Hang. H-A-N-G. I will give you his number and you can, I will let him know if you would pick contact him. He can speak English too, but not too well. His son and daughter-in-law can help you. His number is 989-714-0301. And I can give you another number too of one of my uncles too. His name is Tang, T-E-N-G. His last name is Yang, Y-E-N-G. He is in the Warren area. His number is 586-344-5909. And I believe that that person, he used to live in Rhode Island, but moved to Michigan, and I don't know why Michigan, so you can contact him.
And what was your experience like coming to Michigan? You were then 11?
I was then 11. No. I was 13.
You spent 2 years in Thailand and 2 years in France?
I was 13 going to 14. And we came in summer, July 19, 1979. And believe me, when we came, we don't speak English. We didn't speak English at all. And although, like, we, my brother and sister live here, but we have a church in Bridgeport that sponsor us too. Like Faith Lutheran Church.
The what?
Faith Lutheran Church. And there was another one too, I forgot, St. Matthew. St. Matthew. Yes, St. Matthew and Faith Lutheran Church. Yeah.
St. Lutheran.
Yeah. Yeah, they both sponsor us to come to the States here too.
So what was that like coming here for you?
Well, I guess that, you know, because we used to live in France. So when we came over here, it's more like living in France. At first, we did not like it at all because we didn't know the language. But as we went to school, we started middle school, and then a couple years later, then we just have to learn to like it. But basically, you call it, right?
Do you have some sense of how many people now are here?
In the state of Michigan? In Michigan, we used to have close to 7,000, but a lot of people move out due to jobs and due to chicken farming down south. A lot of people have left, so I would say that we have close to like 5,000, only 5,000 now. Of course, I haven't looked at the census yet, but
I just wanted to get some sort of sense.
Now, we used to have a large population here. At one point, I'm not so sure now what we are ranking, but at one point, if you were looking at Vermont in the United States, Michigan actually ranked about 5th or 6th place. So, you know, first is California, then Minnesota, Wisconsin, and all the states in Michigan. Michigan actually ranked it as 5th or 6th. Has a larger small population, but right now I'm not so sure because a lot of more people have moved.
South.
Yeah, moved down south to Arkansas, to Arizona, to all those what you can find, you know. Because there was a wave of farming, chicken farming. So a lot of more people would go and do chicken.
Yeah. And how did they choose chicken?
How did you choose chicken?
Raising chickens back in the wild?
Yes. I think it's because of that, and I think because of fast money, I would think. You know, sometimes, like, see, within our Hmong people, sometimes, like, when they heard or when they learned that you can actually invest money into this and you get fast money, and people all jump into that. So, but a lot of them, I believe they want to improve the life situation or the environment for a better life. So maybe that's why they laugh and do that too, you know? But a lot of, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of before though, we do have over hundreds of restaurants in Michigan here for the Hmong people, Chinese and Thai restaurants. And it seems like Michigan here is known as the number one restaurant business of the Hmong people in the United States.
Really?
Yes. My sister and brother-in-law own a Thai restaurant in East Lansing. Off from Grand River.
Oh,
right. So, if you go in there, that'll be my sister's building that owns it.
I think it's right near our house. It's near Coral Gables and Sunset Street.
It's by Hagedin, by that area, by Michigan State. Yeah.
That's your sister and brother?
Yep, my sister, my older sister. Mm-hmm. It's got Thai kitchen.
Very
cool.
Half a mile from my house.
So her name is Chu, C-H-O-U. Did you want to interview her? You always saw her.
So are there specific Hmong dishes there? Or how does that, tell me about the food.
The food, you know what? If you want real Hmong dishes, you will not find it in a restaurant if you go there, but you have to request for it. But if you want, and then the restaurant is basically, you know, the people who own restaurants are basically Thai food. They only use Thai food or Chinese food.
So what are the foods of the Hmong people?
For the Hmong people?
Yeah.
Chicken soup is the best.
Chicken soup?
Chicken soup? Of course, right? And they would have had, some pork with greens, the mustard greens. Oh, those are the favorite ones.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And so what's maybe hard to generalize, what most people do for work in Michigan?
Oh, yeah, it's kind of hard now. It's very hard now because I know that, you know, like I said earlier, that a few years ago when when everything is still going well, a lot of people like in a restaurant, and I would think that a lot of people like go for a restaurant business. But as the years go by and then everything went downhill,
when what?
When things like go down a little bit, when the big three started to go down, the economic was going down, then a lot of restaurants were closed down. But I think that a lot of people were working at factories and the companies like the big three, I believe, and assembly lines. And of course, like we do have a group of engineers, and we have nurses, and we have a couple of, you know, a few doctors in Michigan here too. And nowadays, a lot of people like tend to go into pharmacy. We have a few pharmacists in the area too. And of course, you know, we have teachers, like myself, and we have a pretty large, a few of us are with teachers with Beecher Public Schools. And if you want to know more about that, I have friends that who are in the other clan, the Crew KUE. I can refer you to them, to interview them, because he's one of the person that can first start teaching down with Detroit Public Schools. I will give you his information. His first name is, well, he changed his name to American, and now it's Dennis Crew. But I still have his number. You can call him. You can call him. Here's a song that you and I spoke, and you got his information from me. He'd be glad to help you. So, he is 586-863-3021.
How do you spell his last
name? K-U-E. And then I believe that he might be the first teacher with the Detroit Public School, as far as Hmong people. And I think that he's one of the first settlers from somewhere else and then moved to Michigan too. Then you can ask him, why do you move to Michigan? Why should you move here too?
So tell me, I mean, I know I can read and I will be reading, but tell me about a little bit about the culture in terms of... the Hmong people were in all these different countries, and you didn't have necessarily one country. Is that right, or is that a myth? Or?
Well, actually, yeah, we have no country at all. We have no country at all. As far as history goes, as I've been reading too and learning from my culture, you know, like many, 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 many years ago, we actually came from China. You know, and then if you were going to read it, if you're going to read it, you probably know that too. It's due to like, Hmong actually is called meaning free. Well, you will find out that online too. Either they say free or free man. So, well, you know, it depends on who's ever interpreted. And then we like to live on top of higher, on the highland, you know, up in the mountain, and do not want anyone to control us. So we want it to live freely. So as the more people start moving out of China, because the Chinese government like start to control a lot of them, so that's why they start moving to be free. Well, if you read online, you'll find out a lot of information.
But I also want from you, because then that will help me when I'm
sure,
personalize it a little
bit. Right. Well, we actually call the Highland people too. You know, the Highland, because we always live higher up in the mountain. And then one other thing, and another thing too, is you wanted to interview my principal. He's African American, and he went to Laos with me to visit, and it will be a good experience for him. He will still talk about it. Yeah.
And you were growing up in Laos.
Right.
Were you aware of any relatives from China, or that's way, way back?
No. No. I learned it when I started teaching about my history.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because we didn't, yeah, I never knew, you know, back then, I never knew that originally, like, we're from China. You know, I didn't know that until, like, I started reading articles on it, you know, as you get older. And then, you know, like, when you go to school, a lot of people keep calling you Chinese, but the only thing that people know is, like, Chinese. Even nowadays, and at my school, they don't know who the Hmong people are. They keep you calling Chinese, and, you know, start growing up, you start reading. That's how I learned it, too. Because most of our last name, and if you listen to the language, about language and Chinese language, they have some similar tone and similar words, so they don't mean the same thing. You know, it's just like the pronunciations of Chinese, very similar. So.
And what about the, all the beautiful artwork?
The clothes?
But
you know what? As I remember, like years ago, though, we don't have all those beautiful artworks. All this beautiful artwork started back in the refugee camp. Because a lot of people, like, of course, like, we do have, like, similar clothes. If you go back and you do some research on, like, traditional Hmong clothes, you will not see, as you saw, like, earlier, all this glitter. You will not see that. You will not see that. You will see the normal skirt, like a white skirt, the regular pants, black pants. You will see the regular, if you remember, some beautiful, like, colorful skirts, you will see those. But we have never seen any glitter, you know, like my clothes too. We can never have purple on it, right? We never have red or gold. The only thing we know is all black and white. The earth is all black. And the cockpit is blue. But, and all those artworks, I believe, they started in the refugee camp. Because, you know, like, if you live in a refugee camp, they have nothing else to do. And that is another way of making money, too, when you do those nice artworks. You send to people to the States here to sell it for you. And then when you get some money, you know, that's just the pastime, too, I believe. Because we, as we grew up, we never knew that we had such a beautiful clothes. Like, if you over the years, if you have a chance to go to a big New Year celebration in California, which is still going on right now because they hold for a whole week, you'll see different clothes.
Different
clothes. Different, like, outfits. I'll show you what I mean. Because a friend of mine went down there and I just saw him. Photos and he has like tons of clothes there too. And you will not believe that we have those clothes. Are those like that?
Beautiful.
I'll show it to you what I mean. Yeah, because like we never had those beautiful artwork before, as I remember. Just as I remember. We don't have all of those. And we just started to have those. Let me see if I got all those pictures. Yeah, I was looking at his picture last night. Wow, a lot of Hmong people actually came out with a lot of new design every year.
Really?
So, if you want to know more, then every year we have in June or in August, we usually have soccer tournaments, and you'll see a lot of more people there too.
What kind of tournament?
Sports. We have sports tournaments, and then you will see a lot of
sports,
like soccer. Now they play flag football, volleyball, and top spinning, which is one of the most top spinning. Which is one of the more traditional games. Now let's see if I can find his name. Okay, if you see it online, you will probably see the typical, not so typical outfit like that, with the white skirt, but not so short color. But, they have another one having a missing all white pants, and now I have white outfits. See, this is the one tradition, but this one is chosen here, but not all the white stuff. More tradition, this is more tradition. It will be more tradition, but back then. And now, maybe none. See that?
These are the newer ones.
The newer ones.
The newer ones.
Yeah, so I believe that the artwork is when it's a pastime for the ladies in the refugee camp, and of course. And then this is one of the old outfits too, like a tradition. This is it's called the stripe mom. And we have a few different kind of moms too. Yeah, stripe. Because so we use this stripe because of the clothing. It's determined by the clothing of the yeah. So we do have a lot of, yeah. So.
And what about the tapestry?
Mm-hmm. That's a pastime, it's a story. I don't know which one have you seen it before. Have you seen it, the ones like it talks about how we laugh loud and were chasing by the communists with guns and stuff?
I don't know the stories. I've just seen them in different marketplaces.
So a lot of the things like they do in telling the story too, because I have a few of them. They do actually, you know, as I don't know how much have you read about those people, but of course, way back then, we have no, we never wrote anything down. It's just like storytelling, you know, generation to generation. And we have like different stories, how the earth, yeah, how the earth was formed, how the first person was formed. So now, a lot of old people like to do it, so then they start telling stories, and they use the tapestry, so the artwork is right to talk about the story, tell the story.
Now, were people doing the tapestries a long time ago, or again, when the refugee
camp? I believe the refugee camp, because I don't, because we have never seen it before. We have seen both, we have never seen that before.
And then they were having people sell them in different
stores. Sell different places. And then, of course, like, you know, like, we buy a lot of things, too, because they get shipped over here. They get shipped over here, and then we would go in and buy them, too. Like, they can make them into, like, blankets, bedspread, pillows.
Are there any other hand crafts?
Yes. Let me show you. If you were to see this here, this artwork here, this is like the silver. That was a cartoon. Mm-hmm. It was made by hand. It was all made by hand. Yep. And then the bracelet. And, yep. A lot of those. And then, they do a lot of not so much the shovel, but the hoe. To make those and ignite. They create the instrument.
Oh, that's
the instrument.
What kind of instrument?
They have the flute. They use bamboo to make that. They use the concert thing.
The what?
The concert thing is like the mouthpiece, the pipe.
What is it called?
Thing. Thing. It's a mouth. K H E E J. That's a piece that they perform during the New Year or at a funeral.
At a funeral or what?
Or at the New Year. But mostly, I believe that they perform at the funeral. But you'll find out from the older.
Right.
Yeah.
Are those made from bamboo boards?
No, those are made from bamboo. Okay. So if you go online and you look for a Hmong instrument, and I believe there's a site from Minnesota that will give you all the drawing of instruments that will show you.
So, I can contact the churches. I already know the web is the place to find information. I already took out some books from the library, from the MSU library, which I to read to get some sense of the history. Are there any other institutions, like you have your Great Lakes organization, other organizations?
We do have all the organizations too, but the thing is that we don't have an office.
I see.
Yeah,
okay.
All of the organizations used to have, we used to have an office. Detroit used to have an office. Lansing used to have an office, but due to we are not receiving any more money from the federal government, and now a lot of people are self-sufficient now. They don't need translation anymore, and of course you have to have the group of people that you can service in order. You have to have finance, as I should say, in order for you to receive all those money. And now we don't have all of those anymore because everyone is learning how to adapt to the American life. They have like all their own children grow up. They have their own jobs. They have their own people who speak English. They don't no longer need the service of all these organizations. We have the organization, but we just like a volunteering basis. It's not a paid position.
So, is the main thrust of this organization to help people learn and celebrate their culture? Or
one of the ones that we do within our culture is, you know, like we have always promote education, of course, and we promote education, we preserve our culture. So the younger generation will know, people like me and other people that are younger than me, preserve the culture, and also like to let other ethnic groups like know who we are.
Is there a lot of pressure for the young people to marry other Hmong people, or it varies according to the family?
Well, it varies. It used to be. Now it seems like if the Hmong people is adapted to the American culture now. And all the culture too, it used to be that, well, you just have to marry from your own town, but right now it's not acceptable if you marry out of your culture. It's more acceptable. But it depends on the family too. Not all families. And it depends, if your family is very, very traditional, they expect you to marry within your own culture. But if your family is a little bit, you know, out of the comfort zone, and not just being all the more traditional, then it's okay.
How did you decide to become a teacher?
Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I have always thought I was going to be in nursing, but I ended up being teaching. I studied a lot. I ended up being teaching.
You always taught first grade?
Well, no. Before I was teaching various grades, I was teaching bilingual education, you know, like helping the Hmong students to be more in the American culture. But I just thought, hey, why not make streaming myself, right? I like it better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that I don't like to teach the Hmong kids, but it's just such a challenge myself. But I have always, like, working, like, teaching, you know, like, with the bilingual students from K to 5th grade. Well, especially with our school, the last few years, where they have that, so people from that Ratchakabo in Thailand, we did actually get
from the what?
The one of the temple in Thailand. And then there were a lot of more people settled down in Thailand. And then they actually, the United States actually opened up to accept more immigrants. And then we have about two or three families settled down around our school area. But no, as far as people coming into Michigan, after we have our three families from our school district, I don't know how many they have from South Lansing and how many they have down in Connie here, but the street, and I have never heard of any more people coming in.
So it's mainly from 1975 to 2099.
Well, not even 99, I don't believe.
It was a direct response to when it came over.
Right. So I think that nowadays it's more like not the church is sponsored anymore. Well, it's more like family and relative sponsored youth development. You know, it's not like it used to be anymore. But it will be a long process if you have, you know, like, of course, like the immigration law is so strict on everything else, and then you cannot even sponsor. You know, I know there's years and years and years ago, you can sponsor, like, siblings, but now it has to be parents and children of the age.
But not siblings.
Not siblings. It used to be siblings can sponsor siblings, but not anymore. It used to, a long time ago, but not anymore. You know, everything's so strict because a lot of people have broken a lot of rules. So now it's very difficult.
Yeah, I noticed there was some, but I didn't go down there. When I came to the New Year's festival, there were some people encouraging people to go to some, like a political event to speak up that it's a strict immigration law.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So are they very politically active then? Or it's just certain people?
Just certain people. You know, I have been invited to go to a few, but I don't involve in politics, so I try to stay away from it, you know. I mean, it's cool too if we go and support them, but I look at myself now, what does it do for me, and who am I going to go speak for? You know, it's nice to go and support, but I just don't see myself to go.
And how did you land just to live in Ortonville?
I live in Orton because we used to live in Ohio, but because I teach down in Detroit.
So,
Ohio
is where?
Ohio is here by Great Trend, by Franklin area, Ohio. Some people will pronounce Cleo, but it's Ohio.
I think, as I say, I really appreciate this. Is like, this is the appetizer.
If you need anything else, just let me know. If you need anything else?
You can email me some of those people.
Sure, I
will. They do or what areas that they can help me with.
I will. Have you seen the movie Gran Torino? Did you know that I was in it?
No.
Yes.
I love the movie.
Chicken Dumpling Lady. So watch again. That was me. Lady looked like me.
Oh, such a good movie.
It was a good movie. I thought, you know, on my way, he's like, maybe if Martha can get hold of it, he's going to ask him, and then I'm doing a book on multiple, and why are you choosing to do a chicken to the group, you know? I was like,
I didn't understand.
Oh, I said, what I was trying to get, I thought maybe for him, so you can interview Mr. Eastwood and ask him, why did you decide to do a movie with the Hmong people?
The director?
No, the Eastwood.
Oh, Clint Eastwood.
Mr. Eastwood. I thought, a very good idea if you actually ask him why chicken.
So did you meet him?
Oh, I met him. I took a picture with him. I have I went and bought, you know, the Cruel of the Ben and Ugly. That was one of my best movies. I went and bought it, had an autograph.
So how did you get one? That was actually the first thing I did when they said from the press, the editor said, you seen Gran Torino.
The young girl who was the sweet, the young girl who lived in Lansing. I know her.
Right. Too. Oh, you do?
I do know her.
I mean, maybe at some point when I get a little more educated, she'd let me interview her?
Yes, I will. Definitely. She was at the New Year, too. But you know the old man that was in the ritual?
I know him. He's telling me for it, too. So how did you get in the film?
At that time, like, we were at our old school, and then a young girl, she came to, of course, I involved with all these people, and then I had seen it, like, emailing. Well, they're coming in school to Michigan to camp people for this role and that role, and they're coming all this. So they came to my school to visit my school because we have a lot of local population. The young girl who was one of the from the camp, and she said, "Come on, my girl, let's just go and go camp and stuff. So you never know." So I said, "Okay, I was trying to be the mom. You know what? I don't have any kids. I'm not married. I don't have any kids. So I don't know how to be a mama, right?" So when I go to camp to give you a scenario, okay, so he wanted to pull his car, and you're the mom, and you're supposed to, like, yelling and do all these things, and your mom is like, but how am I going to do this? And mom, you tell me, like, within 5 seconds, you want me to think of all of this thing in my head? So I could not think of it. So as I was done, I guess that I was not you know,
the mom.
Yeah, the mom sort of scolding my child. So I thought, as I would go home, yeah, I should have scolded the child just like how my sister always yelled at her kid. But it was too late. But anyway, so they said, her name is Olivia. She called me. She called me and she said, oh yeah, you have a part. It's a movie and he saw your audition. He just loved you. And then he got the part to be the neighbor lady. But so cool.
So what was that like? I mean, I'm just curious.
Right? You know, like, yeah, it was like that scene that we took at the end. Did you look at the end? Where we
I have to look to see it again.
At the church. At the church where he died. And I sat and then you see the one lady with the black outfit.
Okay.
And with a little, you know, flowers all over. It was amazing. You can see me clearly sitting behind the young actors.
They had you do two different parts?
Yeah, two different parts. I had my 30-second of fame with him.
You what?
I had my 30-second of fame with him out the door.
That's nice.
It feels like a few different, like, three or four times for that, only that one 30-second. It was a good experience.
Wow.
To take off different angles. Oh, you gotta do this. Oh, you're speaking too fast. Oh, you know, you don't do this right. Yeah. It was a good experience. I thought, well, they want me to speak more. And they don't tell you how to speak because you just have to come up with your own line when you go up there. What are you gonna say? You know? And say, okay, you're gonna take this, you're gonna go up there, you're gonna start speaking more to him, but what do you want me to say? Don't say anything you want to. Okay. You know? But it was a good experience. It was a very good experience. If you want to interview that old gentleman,
yeah.
I have contact. I can contact him for you. Because he doesn't live too far from my school.
And the young girl who plays, she finished high school or not?
I think she finally finished high school maybe this is the first or second year of college.
Where did she go?
I don't know where she goes. I don't know where she goes. But I think, let's see. It might be her second year in college now. I don't know where she goes, but it was a good, it was a really good movie. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so this is a start. You're helping me a lot on the journey because I could have written to you and you said, oh no, I don't want to talk to you, you know, because it's a new venture.
Sure, no problem. I mean, why not? If we're doing a good purpose, good deed, right? Why not? You know, if we're doing a good purpose, for a good purpose, just to let all the community know about us. Why not?
Well, they asked me. They said we don't have any on the Asian group in this series, in this particular series. And so the woman who I'm friends with, she said, we'd really like you to start with the Hmong people. But she said it's up to you which one you want to start with.
So did you find a few other organizations online that you contacted with?
You.
Oh, really?
Like that's how I started.
Oh, that's the one in Detroit? You didn't pop up?
Oh, there's the information. What I'm saying is when I started looking, and then it was a few weeks away from the festival, I said, oh, then this is the right thing. And then you were so friendly. No, I'm serious. You could have been cold or...
You could have been, oh, no, I don't have time right now.
It worked.
Yeah.
So, and then I thought when you wanted to meet us late Friday afternoon, I thought, you're coming back from teaching. You're going to be exhausted from that.
It's okay. But I'm used to it.
Yeah.
Used to it.
So I'm sure I'm going to have a lot more questions.
Sure, no problem.
If you can send me a list
of the people
and I can what their the area of information that they could probably help you with.
Sure.
At the starting point.
Sure.
But when I go back now, I'll have to transcribe this and I have to start reading.
That's fine. I can
know it's a long process. I mean, it'll take about
fine.
A year or so.
That's fine. I'll be here to help you. I can go back and check on the people and who you can see the first settler in Michigan. I'm not, and then I can send it to you. And if you want to meet with them, we can set up a time now. Since we don't have the New Year anymore, I'm free. Before the New Year, I was busy every single weekend because we do the pageant too, and I trained the girls for the pageant, was doing meeting all this for the meeting. So, oh my gosh, doing this on top of my work. And it's like, bring like work to home is never done. Do all these things too, but hey, I'm used to enough stuff. Now it's like, what am I doing on my weekends now? After the New Year? Every year though, that's how it is. What am I going to do with myself now on the weekend? Because I have so much time now. You know?
Okay, well, I really appreciate this as a start. And I always have more questions, so I'll probably ask you questions.
Sure.
Okay, I'll email too.
Sure.
We'll go from there.
Sure, we'll go on from there. We'll go on from there. And I will, like I said, I will get a few numbers for you. You can contact them. And for the older gentleman, if you want to meet with them, we can set up a time and we can go, you know, meet them somewhere. And I'll be your translator.
Okay.
Even though my mom is not perfect, but I'll be your translator.
It'll be fine. Okay.
I'll be your
Thank
translator.
You.
I'm still learning.